Today, our moderator is going to be Sam Bass, and he's going to talk with a couple of guys who are closely associated, I guess is an understatement, with the Dakota Territory Air Museum that provide these beautiful airplanes. We have an introductory video that gives you a little bit of the history of these airplanes and what our allies meant to us in World War II and continue to mean to us. And thank you to those guys for being here and for the preservation of these beautiful airplanes. If you'll direct your attention to the Jumbotron, we'll have the video. Thank you.
A nice graphic.
In jeder Stunde, an jedem Tag, nur zu denken an Deutschland, an Volk und an Reich, an unsere deutsche Nation, unser deutsches Volk, Sieg heil! Sieg heil! Sieg heil!
Adolf Hitler, the Führer, dictator of Nazi Germany, along with Mao and Stalin, one of the most evil killer leaders of the 20th century. Over 6 years, Hitler built an overwhelmingly powerful and tactically brilliant military force, ground, sea, and air. He took over Austria and Czechoslovakia. Then, in 1939, invaded Poland. Within 3 months, he crushed six countries, controlled most of Western Europe, and was knocking on France's door. In the spring of 1940, the Germans surrounded nearly 340,000, mostly British and French, troops. Their only escape was from the shore of the port of Dunkirk in northwestern France. The water was extremely shallow, so British destroyers could not approach the beaches without running aground. Well, Prime Minister Winston Churchill mobilized every possible private boat, over 700 of them, to cross the English Channel from Ramsgate in eastern Britain to the rescue, and saved more than 338,000 British and French troops to fight another day. And that day came very soon when the Germans began what became known as the Blitz, nearly 10 months of bombing Britain day and night, the Battle of Britain.
The RAF met this challenge with some of the best fighter aircraft in the world, the Hawker Hurricane and the Supermarine Spitfire. In the opening days of battle, Britain was in immediate need of two things, a collective stiff upper lip and aluminum. A plea was made by the government to turn in all available aluminum to the Ministry of Aircraft Production. "We will turn your pots and pans into Spitfires and Hurricanes," the ministry declared, and they did. Both these iconic aircraft, in spite of their differences, both in origin and in performance, the two fighters became counterparts. Together, they turned the tide of history's first great air battle. A question that has been asked by pilots, historians, and air enthusiasts since 1940 and still persists today, which is better, the Supermarine Spitfire or the Hawker Hurricane? Wing Commander Robert Stanford Tuck said the Spitfire was like a fine thoroughbred racehorse, while the dear old Hurricane was rather like a heavy workhorse. After many years of reflection, said a former Spitfire pilot during the 1980s, "I take the view that it took both of them to win the Battle of Britain, and neither would have achieved it on its own."
Okay,
Good morning, folks. Welcome to the 2020-21 Warbirds in Review. We'd like to welcome you here.
You guys got your direct.
This is very unique.
We didn't get time to put names on them.
Opportunity here to see the two airplanes that won the Battle of Britain. We have Warren Peach here. We also have
Ray Middleton.
This Ray Middleton and Bernie Vasquez. And the owner of the museum that owns these airplanes, amongst others, is Bruce Eames. Now, Bruce, if you would have a seat here, and you, Warren, and you go on the other side, I'd appreciate it. Over here. We also have Chuck Craven. Chuck, there he is. He's the historian. He will be helping us out in our little interview here. Now, first of all, Warren is a pilot presenter for today, and he's the vice president of operations for the museum. He was a 20-year captain for a major airline, 35,000 hours, honorable Canadian snowbird, aerobatic competency evaluator for ICAS, owner of Peach Minot, North Dakota. I can't say that word.
Minot.
Minot. I can almost say that.
Minot. Why not?
And also, he's qualified in too many airplanes for you to list here, so I won't do that. And this is the owner of the museum. And Bruce has quite a collection of airplanes in his museums there. I'll just go through a little few here. These are just the Warbirds. C-53 Skytrooper, Mark 9 Spitfire, P-51 C and D. Do you also have an A?
No.
Just P, C and D? Yeah. Mark 4 Harvard, P-40, F-8 Bearcat, Hurricane, F-2 M-2 Wildcat, L-5, P-47 Thunderbolt, and numerous other aircraft. I understand it was how many square feet do you have in your museum?
Yeah. Well, the museum has 55,000 square feet of indoor displays and 17 acres of outdoor displays. We actually started the Dakota Territory Air Museum in 1986, and we've been building it ever since. And Bruce is a big part with the Warbird end of things. We have a deal worked out with him where he lends us the airplanes, and we use them to promote the museum. We have about 60 airplanes in the museum total, and Bruce has about a dozen there with the ones you just listed, obviously. So.
Well, what motivates you to start the museum to start off with?
Well, I don't own the museum. I'm a big sponsor of it, as Warren indicated. But I'm probably like a lot of people here that I'm at the age group where I and all my friends growing up, our fathers had been in World War II. So we grew up building the models, hearing the stories, and really getting inspired by it and intrigued by it. And so the rest of my life was going to air shows just like this. And I was fortunate enough that at some point in my life that my business was successful enough that I could start doing something to add to this and help keep these planes alive and share them with people and so on. That's really was the motivation.
That's an understatement.
There you go.
Well, it's very well put. Only, just talk about the Spitfire to start off with. First of all, when was it developed? When did they first start flying the Spitfire?
Well, 1936, I believe, was the first flight of the Spitfire, and it was obviously a different airplane than this, and I'm sure a lot of you know that probably more about the history than I do, but the first one came out with a tail skid and a two-bladed wooden propeller that was fixed. So you can see the progression through the years of them. They built over 20,000 Spitfires of different marks. And it was a year behind the Hurricane. The Hurricane was designed and built in 1935, originally, I believe. And we have a British gentleman here who was involved in restoring this airplane and helping us keep this airplane going, Ray Middleton. And he knows that history very well because these airplanes are extremely important to England. They're important to us also, but this is an iconic airplane for them, as is the Hurricane. And you know, it's as you saw in the video, the lead-in video, as the war was gearing up, it was pretty obvious that something was coming, and people were trying to develop airplanes as fast as they could and get things going. And so Spitfire to answer the question about 1936 and built throughout the war, the Hurricane in 35 and built throughout the war.
So you said this was, there were 20,000 of them that were built? And how many do you think are still able to fly? Different ones.
We were discussing this the other day. We think 40 or 50 Spitfires left flying and maybe 13 Hurricanes.
Okay, just for reference here, what was the original horsepower for the original two-bladed prop?
Ray? You know what the original horsepower was?
Under 1,000, around about 1,000 horsepower.
Now, what was it at the end of the marks?
Well, with the Griffin engine, it was up around 2,200.
How much?
2,250.
Big difference, right?
Yeah. Quite a development. The tails got bigger. Right. Everything, you know, it became a real challenge. And I believe the Griffin Spitfire has a limited power that it can be used on takeoff because they can't control the airplane during the takeoff roll. They have to wait until they're actually airborne and at a certain speed before they can open it up.
Well, what kind of range did it have?
None.
So
they're interceptors. I mean, they went up and down.
That was it.
That's probably one of the major differences in the mentality of building the airplanes, I think, is what they were doing with them. They were on an island, and the channel was small, and this airplane carries a 94 Imperial, 116 U.S. gallons, so an hour and 50 minutes, it's out of gas. And this one originally had a very similar amount of fuel. This one has been modified a little bit, which makes it a very nice cross-country airplane, but it doesn't have any room for ammo anymore because of the gas. But you know what? I would say that they were 50-minute airplanes, 50 minutes to an hour, especially in a fight when they had the power open. So
they'd fly maybe two or three missions a day, right?
Oh, I think during the Battle of Britain, they probably flew 10
missions.
Yeah, if they survived that long.